Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 12, Mahini Murti Bewilders Lord Shiva, Text Number 15. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Kotu Halaya Daityanam, Yoshidvesho Mayadrita, Pashita Sura Karyani, Kate Piyusha Bhajane. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, Kotu Halaya, for the bewildering, Daityanam, of the demons, Yoshidveshaha, the form of a beautiful woman, Maya, by me, Dritaha, assumed, Paishata, seeing that it is necessary for me, Sorakaryani, for executing the interests of the demigods, Gate, having been taken away, Piyusha Bhajane, the jug of nectar. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Supreme Personality of Godhead said, when the demons took away the jug of nectar, I assumed the form of a beautiful woman to bewilder them by directly cheating them and thus to act in the interest of the demigods. Purport, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead assumed the form of the beautiful woman, Mohini Murti, the demons were certainly captivated, but the demigods present were not. In other words, those who maintain a demoniac mentality are bewildered by the beauty of a woman. But those who are advanced in Krishna consciousness, or even those on the platform of goodness, are not bewildered. Supreme Personality of Godhead knew that because Lord Shiva is not an ordinary person, he cannot be bewildered even by the most beautiful woman. Cupid himself tried to invoke Lord Shiva's lusty desires in the presence of Parvati. But Lord Shiva was never agitated. Rather, the blazing fire from Lord Shiva's eyes turned Cupid to ashes. Therefore, Lord Vishnu had to think twice about this, what kind of beautiful form would bewilder even Lord Shiva. Consequently, he was smiling gravely, as stated in the previous verse, Prahasya Bhava Gambhiram. A beautiful woman generally cannot induce Lord Shiva to be lusty. But Lord Vishnu was considering whether there was any form of a woman who could enchant him. Tateham darshayas yishami drid diriksho sura satama kaminam bahu mantavyam sankalpa prabhavodayam. O best of the demigods, I shall now show you my form that is very much appreciated by those who are lusty. Since you want to see that form, I shall reveal it in your presence. Purport. Lord Shiva is desiring to see Lord Vishnu reveal the most attractive and beautiful form of a woman, was certainly a joking affair. Lord Shiva knew that he could not be agitated by any so-called beautiful woman. The daityas may have been bewildered, he thought, but since even the demigods could not be agitated, what to speak of me, who am the best of all the demigods? However, because Lord Shiva wanted to see Lord Vishnu's form as a woman, Lord Vishnu decided to impersonate a woman and show him a form that would immediately put him in an ocean of lusty desires. In effect, therefore, Lord Vishnu told Lord Shiva, I shall show you my form as a woman, and if you become agitated by lusty desires, do not blame me. The attractive features of a woman are appreciated by those who are affected by lusty desires. But those who are above such desires, who are on the platform of Krishna consciousness, are very difficult to bewilder. Nonetheless, by the supreme desire of the personality of Godhead, everything can be done. This was to be the test of whether Lord Shiva could remain unagitated. Now the question is, if after hearing this, are we going to become agitated? Before I read any more, maybe I will read some more. As Krishna is known as Achintya, inconceivable. So his pastimes are also inconceivable. The Lord Shiva, he's generally not bewildered at all, even by his own wife, Parvati, who is an expansion of Srimati Radharani for the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the material world, and who can practically bewilder anyone within this universe. But Lord Shiva is not agitated by her, although he's intimately connected with her. The story by Kalidas, when there was a fight between the demigods and the demons, and they needed a son. They needed a general. The demigods needed a general who could help them in the war against the demons. At this time, Lord Shiva was in meditation because he had lost his wife because Sati had committed suicide. And therefore, Lord Shiva was he was in meditation, feeling separation from Sati. Of course, feeling separation from Krishna also. Therefore, the demigods thought of a plan how to get Lord Shiva, and at this time, Sati had taken birth as Parvati. Parvati was the daughter of Parvata, one of the mountains called Parvata. She was the daughter. And so the demigods induced Parvati to try to seduce or agitate Lord Shiva, but Kalidas, in his poem, he says that Lord Shiva is called Dira. He was so sober that even his Parvati could not agitate him. So Lord Shiva, apparently, at least from one point of view, may have been challenging Lord Vishnu, just like sometimes the people they challenge. Is your God so strong that he can lift any mountain? And the devotee says, yes, of course, he's that strong. So could he create a mountain so big, so heavy, that he can't lift it? That's the challenge. If he's God, he must be able to create a mountain so heavy that even he can't lift it. So the answer is what? Yes. And then afterwards he'll lift it. So if you don't understand it, it's all right, because there's a lot of things we don't understand. Like we're not this body, for instance. Still, here Lord Shiva, who's constantly fixing his mind upon Krishna, and as it says, Yadavadi mama Krishna cheta padara vinde nava nava rasa daman yutam rasimati sit tadavadi naris sangame smaryamane Bhavati Mukha Shusti Vikara Shusti Vinamcha. That Tamunacharya, he's praying that ever since I've been engaged in meditating upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead and relishing ever new happiness by doing so, whenever I think of my previous association with women, I become disgusted at the thought. That Tamunacharya was a king, and therefore he had ample opportunity for sense gratification. But he also was a devotee, a great devotee. He became a great devotee. And therefore he was constantly in trance, meditating upon Krishna. And in that ecstasy, that there was no question of desiring sense gratification, because as Prahlad Maharaj said, sense gratification is tuchavat compared to pure devotional service. Yanmai dunaiti, Grihamedi Sukham Hitucham. Tucham means insignificant. As compared to Kandudava Iva Dukha Dukham. Kandudavan. Van means like. Like rubbing of two hands, Karyo Dukha Dukham. Yanmai Tunadi Grihamedi Sukham Hidu Sukham. Kanduryaneda Karyo Iva Dukha Dukham. If you have a scratch and you scratch it, if you have an itching sensation, and you scratch it, then you feel some happiness. Just like Lord Tortoise, Matsya, he had an itching sensation on his back. But since Lord Tortoise is quite big, hundreds and 100,000 yojanas across, 800,000, 120,000 kilometers across, therefore it takes quite good massages to scratch his back, to free him from the itching sensation. You can imagine the size of someone doing a massage on korma in order to satisfy his itching sensation. So the solution was they put Mandara Mountain on his back, made out of gold. I think that's 800,000 yojanas high. 100,000 yojanas high, which is 800,000 miles. So it's a good scratch he got. But ultimately, for Lord Tortoise, it's a transcendental scratch. But for the materialist, the relieving end of itching sensation is considered to be happiness. But that, Prahlad Maharaj says, is kandutiva. Oh, not kandutiva. Kandutivat, which means it's insignificant. Tuchavat, which means it's insignificant. Just like the six Goswamis, they were fabulously wealthy, and they were aristocratic administrators and the governors of the Hussein Shah. They held posts of ministers and were fabulously wealthy. And Raghunath Das Goswami was also fabulously wealthy. His father and uncle were zamindars, which means tax collectors and landholders. But Srinivasacharya, he glorifies them with the following verse which one is that verse? Sankhya purvaka namagana nativi kolo lasani krito. That's the wrong one. Let's try another one. See, the six Goswamis, they were always engaged in... You know the one before? Fifth verse from the Kostamastika. The one before, Sankhya Purva Gana Nativi. Fifth, yeah. No, that's it. We'll try the next one. The one before that. Before Sankhya. What's that? No, the one before Sankhya Purva Kanamikani Dati B. That's not the one. Fifth. No, that's not right. No, that's not it. That's not. What about the one before? That's not right either. It's not possible. Sankhya purva kanama gana nativi kolola sannikrito nidrahara vihara kadi vijito Satyanka Chido Dano Gopi Baba Rasamrita Dilahari Kolo Lasanikrito Bande Rupa Sanatano Raguyago Shi Jiva Gopalago. So what's the first word of that again? Tyatva Tornama Shesha Mandala Pati Shrenim Sada Tuchavat. See, here we have the word tutravada again, that the six Goswamis, they were, what's that first word again? Tyaktva. Tyaktva, to give up. Tyaktva tvarnam ashesha mandalapati. Ashesha mandalapati. Mandalapati, mandala is what? It's the world. It's the whole world. Pati, they were lords of the world. Tyaktva means to give up. So they gave up their exalted positions in the material world. Tyaktva tvarnam ashesha. Ashesha means unlimited. They had so much power and opulence that prakriti was unlimited. Mandala pati shrenim sada tuchava, as if something insignificant. Tyaktva toranam ashesha mandala pati shrenim sada tuchava. Bhutva dina gunesha ko karunaya. And then they put on clothes to mendicants and went to Vrindavan, where they lived like ordinary persons begging from door to door. But they were so much enriched with the gopis' feelings of separation for Krishna that they felt transcendental pleasure at every moment. Tyaktva tvarnam ashesha mandalapati shrenim sada tuchavat Bhutva dina guneshako karunaya kopi nakanta shito gopi bhava rasamrita dilahari kolo lasanikrito bande rupa sanatana raguyago shi jiva gopalago. So the gopis eternally, they're always thinking about Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, and feeling unlimited transcendental pleasure due to their unlimited love and the transcendental pleasure that's found in Vrindavan. And therefore, all other experiences other in the material world or even the spiritual world seem to be insignificant. So that's our basic principle. Vishayavinivartante niharasyadehinam rasavarjam rasopyasya paramdrishva nivartate. That the embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, although the taste for sense objects remains, but ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, one becomes fixed in consciousness. So this is what all the great devotees show us, and the lesson is that although we may think it not as so important to fix our mind upon Krishna, but the whole idea is that if we become convinced that if I can simply concentrate my mind upon Krishna in a favorable way, then I can feel some happiness. And that happiness will be greater than any temporary happiness I can feel in the material world. As it says in the Bhagavad Gita, but there's some preliminary qualifications. As a matter of fact, there's a lot of preliminary qualifications, such as in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Vidyavanaya sampane, Buddhya vishuddhya yukto, chitatmana niyamya. Shabdadim, that's not right. Buddhya? Interesting. Tad buddhyas, tad atmanas, tad nishtas, tad parayanaha, gachantnya puna avritim, kyana nidu tu kalmashaha. All right? Yes, that's right. Tad buddhyas, tad atmanas, tad nishtas, tad parayana, gajanya purna avritim, jnana nirdutta kamasha. When one's faith, mind, refuge, intelligence are all fixed in the Supreme, then one becomes fully cleansed of all misgivings through complete knowledge and thus proceeds straight on the path of self-realization. So it's not that we're going to sit down for japa and chant perfect rounds, and the rest of the day our minds is all over the universe. No one has to utilize one's intelligence, practice utilizing the intelligence, and then controlling the mind by fixing it upon Krishna and engaging the activities in Krishna's service. Then one will gradually become cleansed of all misgivings through complete knowledge. In other words, the lusty, angry, greedy, illusory, forgetful experiences that we have in the material world will gradually be cleansed away. And what will we see? What will be the great revelation? Krishna says, Vidya Vinaya Sampane Brahmani Gavi Hasani Shuni Taiva Swapaketa Pandita Samadarshana. We'll be able to see all living entities on the same spiritual level, whether it be a dog or a dog eater or a cat or a elephant or a Brahmin. We'll all see them as Krishna's eternal servants within a material body. Yahaivatarajita Sarge, Yesham Samye Sitamanak. Nidoshim hi samam brahma, tasma brahmani te siddha. When one's situated in equanimity, the mind is not hankering or lamenting anymore, hankering to exploit others or wanting to be exploited by others, then one is said to be in equanimity. Ihaiva tera jita sargo yesam samye saman manak. Nidosham hi samam brahma, tasmat brahmani te siddha. Then there's nirdosham, then there's no fault in his existence. One is always peaceful and happy, unagitated. Nipravishat priyam prapya, nodvijat chapriyam, stira buddhira samudho, brahmavid brahmani siddha. That a person who doesn't hanker for what he doesn't have, nor lament about what he lost, who is self-intelligent, unbewildered, and who knows the science of God, is said to be situated in transcendence. And how does he see things? Vyas parsheva saktatma vindyatyatmini yasukam sabrahma yoga yuktatma sukham akshayam ashnude. Such a person is situated in trance and is self-controlled. He's not attracted to external sense objects, but is always in trance, enjoying the pleasure from within. In this way, the self-realized soul enjoys unlimited happiness because he concentrates on the Supreme. So we're just trying to learn the technique, the activities necessary to fix our minds upon Krishna and to concentrate our minds upon Krishna. And if we do that, then we'll enjoy unlimited pleasure from within. Now what's the alternative? Sparshe, yehi sam sparshe boga, dukkha yoni evate, Adyantavanta kontiya nateshu ramate buddha. Such a person is not attracted to temporary sense objects because he knows that such pleasures have a beginning and an end, and so the wise man doesn't delight in them. Okay, but I'm still attracted, so what should I do? I know I shouldn't be attracted. Kama saknoti haiva yakshodun praksharira vimokshana. Kama krodo bhavan dvegans yukta sasukinara. Before giving up this present body, if one is able to tolerate the urges of the senses and check the force of desire and anger, he is a yogi and he is happy in this world. So yes, there is going to be vegams, pushings of the senses, but we have to learn tolerance. So Krishna, in Bhagavad Gita, this is what he stresses. You're not this body, but still you have to learn tolerance. You may not be this body. You may even intellectually know you're not the body, but you have to learn tolerance and fix your mind upon me at the same time. Now, if one fixes his mind upon Krishna, tani sarvani samyamya yukta sitamatpara vishehi yasyendriyani tasya pragya pratishtita. One who restrains his senses and organs of action and fixes his mind upon me is known as a man of steady intelligence. If we can do that, then our lives will become perfect because we'll experience so much happiness like Prahlad Maharaj experienced. Prahlad was being tortured by his father for a long time, and when Lord Nrisimhadev came before him and offered him any kind of benediction, he wasn't interested. He didn't say, take me to the emergency ward of, you know, the hospital, you know, that last trident that they stuck into me hurts. Now, he didn't complain. He didn't want anything. He simply said, Naiva dvije paradharatya vai taranyas tvavirya gayana mahamrita magni chitak soche vimukha chetasa indriyaratam maya sukhayam bharam udvitam vimudam. That I don't need anything. that now that I'm chanting your glories, I'm merging into an ocean of pleasure, of happiness, and I'm completely satisfied. But whenever I think of the suffering conditioned souls, I become compassionate. Although I have no problems myself, but my only problem is I'm unhappy to see others unhappy. And therefore I'm working to bring them back to your lotus feet. So certainly Lord Shiva was always fixing his mind upon Krishna. There is no possibility of Lord Shiva's mind being deviated from Lord Krishna's lotus feet. Still, Krishna could create a form that even Lord Shiva, when he's thinking about Krishna in devotion, could actually become lusty. So how that, what kind of lust that is, or the how that happens, we cannot conceive of. But in any case, we should keep that in mind rather than criticize Lord Shiva. Oh, Lord Shiva lost his senses, lost control of his senses. If he can't do it, then how can I do it? That's usually an excuse. So it's too much for such a great personality to do. So I have a great excuse why I should fall down. And when they criticize me, they say, well, do you want to criticize Lord Shiva also? He also fell down. Everyone falls down. Brahma fell down, Shiva fell down. The only person that doesn't fall down is Vishnu, but I'm not claiming to be Vishnu. So I have a good excuse. Now we should keep in mind that, first of all, I don't think Lord Vishnu has to show us, or Lord Krishna has to show us a form of Mohini Murti for us to become bewildered. But we should keep in mind also that when Krishna didn't want the demigods to become bewildered, although they saw the form of Mohini Murti, that they didn't become bewildered. So this is very special manifestation specifically for Lord Shiva. Otherwise, Lord Vishnu doesn't have any need to show such a form to anyone. But he showed especially to Lord Shiva for illustrating some point. Number one, we shouldn't become too proud that we're the controller of all our senses. Then we'll get into difficulty. And number two, there are special Krishna has unlimited potency, and we can never underestimate what he can do if he wants to do it. There's nothing he can't do if he wants to do it. Okay, thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Yes. That's all right.
Thank you. I was thinking about this saying, you know, pride goes before a fall, that Lord Shiva was thinking, the demigods didn't get bewildered, and I'm the best of the demigods, so I'm not going to get bewildered. I just want to see this form, and then next thing, we know what happens. So it's so important for us to be very careful in our devotional life, to not allow pride to cause a fall.
Yes, good.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm disappointed you didn't thank me for the class, so.
Sorry?
You didn't thank me for the class.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for the class.
You're representative.
I wanted to ask, sometimes we have devotees who do a lot of book distribution, do a lot of preaching, and then they bloop. So how does this happen? Because they seem so successful, and then...
Successful? Well, we'll be successful when we see Krishna with a flute standing before us. And we're manifesting our original spiritual identity. Then we're successful. Distributing books is nice. That can lead to success. It's part of the process. But success is explained by Rupa Goswami in the Nectar or the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Success is going from Shraddha to Prema. Not simply distributing a lot of books or getting some position. It's being completely dedicated to pleasing Krishna. 100% of the time, with full determination. In any case, if one distributes books or one does any service to Krishna, there's no loss of diminution. And eventually one will get tired of the material energy and come back to Krishna's feet, start where we left off. Anything else? Yes.
I'm just reflecting on Mukund Madhava's question, and I'm remembering how Srila Prabhupada said he was praying once, and disciples asked Srila Prabhupada, what are you praying? And he's saying, I'm praying to Krishna, please don't let me fall down. So if Srila Prabhupada is praying like that, what to speak of us, you know? Every moment we have to be praying for the mercy of the Lord.
We have to pray to Krishna. Please, Krishna, please remind me to pray to you, not to, so I won't fall down.
Yes, Guru Maharaj, I agree. Thank you.
Anything else?
A question. Shiva is in goodness, so he was not disturbed by lust, but burning Cupid to ashes, how is that sign of mode of goodness? First question. Okay.
Well, I don't know exactly what mood he was when he burned Cupid to ashes, but obviously Lord Shiva is known as Tri Linga, like Parvati's Tri Linga, so he can manifest different modes of nature according to his pastimes. So if you're Cupid, he's not Vishnu. In that story of Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, and Lord Vishnu, Bhriga Muni coming, testing who's the most tolerant, Bhriga Muni, he didn't offer obeisances to Lord Brahma, and Lord Brahma was going to curse him, but his intelligence stopped him from cursing his son, Bhriga Muni. Bhriga Muni then went to Lord Shiva, who tried to embrace him, and Lord Shiva and Lord Bhriga Muni said, go away, don't touch me, you're filthy, you're full of ashes and bad association. So Lord Shiva was going to kill him, but Parvati saved Bhriga Muni. Only Lord Vishnu was so tolerant that Bhriga Muni even kicked him in the chest, and Lord Vishnu was completely undisturbed. Instead, he got down from the bed where Lakshmi Devi was massaging his feet, and took Bhriga Muni's feet and started to massage them, and said, my dear Bhriga Muni, your feet are just soft like a lotus flower, and they've hit my hard chest, which is hard like a thunderbolt, so I hope I didn't hurt you, so please let me massage them. And now that your lotus foot has touched my hard chest, it's purified me. And so please, now I know that the goddess of fortune will be happy to stay there because you purified my contaminated chest. Please stay this Vaikuntha planet and purify it. So that's called tolerance. Imagine someone, you're sitting there and someone's massaging your foot and someone comes into the room and kicks you in the chest. What would you do? Would you get down and massage their foot? No, but that's Lord Vishnu. So Lord Shiva, apparently sometimes he gets, for whatever reason, he sometimes get angry. So if you see Lord Shiva, be on your best behavior. Therefore he's known as Ashutosha.
There is one more interesting, even more I think, than this question.
Okay.
Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura states that if one worships the example of the liberated gopis of Vrindavan who accepted Lord Krishna as their paramour, one can free one's mental activities from the contamination of lust. Question. Can you say something more about worshipping their example, about worshipping or about following probably their example? How is that done?
Done? We do service to Krishna according to our capacity, and we try to do it enthusiastically. That's their example. We don't imitate them because we don't know who. First of all, they have spiritual bodies, and we have a material one. So they're engaging their spiritual bodies in Krishna's service. We have to engage this material body, mind, in Krishna's service. So we have a different service to do than they have, in one sense. But we engage it, and that way we become purified. And one day we'll find out who we are. Then we can engage like the gopis or some other cowherd boys, whatever our service is to Krishna in a spiritual body. But now we're hearing how to engage in unalloyed, uninterrupted service to Krishna with this body.
Valabi Knapp has one more question.
Okay.
And I would attach my question to her question. You were mentioning something about this college somehow had to, because she is asking a question: is humanism a bad thing? And probably this
what college? I don't remember. Did I say the word college today?
No, yesterday you were mentioning.
Radhadesh.
Huh?
Something about Radhadesh.
Yeah, yeah. About how.
Yeah. I know.
You have to submit to.
Yeah,
to
they
this.
Don't like anything absolute.
Yeah,
everything
like this,
has to be relative.
So my question would be also, and she is asking, is humanism a bad thing? Because
what do you mean by humanism? The idea that human beings are in the center of the universe. They determine their own. Yeah, of course, it's demoniac. It's atheistic, demoniac, materialistic philosophy. You send one to the darkest regions of ignorance.
What about this issue, Upanishadic mantra, who says we should know side by side?
Yeah, you should know everything. You should know how this so-called material world is related to Krishna, side by side, to knowing about the spiritual world too.
But then you have to know also what materialists somehow how
you don't
they
have to know that. Okay. That will all be revealed to you if you know those two things.
Okay.
So. If you know how everything comes from Krishna, you know that Krishna is the source of everything, and you know who Krishna is, and you don't have to, all these other things will be revealed.
So we don't have to go on internet and check some theories or,
no,
or
of course
something.
Not. You just get bewildered.
But is there some excuse for doing that?
You could find one if you want to. At your own risk. All right, thank you very much. Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.